Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Live from Post Wrestling HQ, it's John Pollock, and it is Wei Ting, a refreshed Wei Ting, who is coming off night one of SummerSlam, and I think Wei has cracked the code at how to watch a WWE premium live event in 2025. He's gonna share his secret tonight. How are you, Wei?
It's not much to share. I'm doing well, John. Yeah, doing well. You know, it was quite the show, very enjoyable. And I think I would have been stunned by that result if I didn't have a spoiler of a co-host like you to ruin it for all of us.
Sorry.
Boo this man. He ruined SummerSlam. Boo.
Well, I think you did not ruin SummerSlam. Because tell people what time. This show started at 6 p.m., God knows what time in the afternoon, if you were out of your mind watching a pre-show. What time did you sit down to watch SummerSlam tonight?
So I was able to, get my son down for early bedtime today. So it was about like 7:15 I probably started.
Oh, 7:15. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking you weren't going to be starting this till like 8 o'clock or so.
No, I had to kind of rush, but okay. I did save like an hour, 15 minutes.
Okay. How quickly did you catch up to live from sitting down?
I didn't.
Oh, you
so
didn't?
I basically watch all the way till 10 o'clock. That's the delayed start.
Okay. Well, yeah. You made good time overall. So
yeah. Yeah.
Well, we have a seven match show to go through, I guess, technically. And we are going to be getting into night one of SummerSlam momentarily. Do want to welcome all the people here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. It's where all the fun goes down. And do us a favor. Hit that subscribe button because we're going to be back tomorrow night, right after SummerSlam. Wei, what time is bedtime tomorrow night?
Tomorrow should be 5. My mother-in-law will be helping out. So I think we could start probably right after the main event.
Okay. And maybe a little bit at the end of the show, we'll just quickly remind people of the card tomorrow. Because some people watching this, they may have no idea what the matches are tomorrow. But that is for night two. How do you feel, Wei, at the halfway point of SummerSlam?
I'll tell you, like, if they...
Are you ready for this another night?
I mean, I guess in previous years, they we could have had, I don't know, a 10-match at SummerSlam, you know? I'm perfectly fine, like, digesting what we watch, talking about it, and then coming back next tomorrow.
Do you remember attending this very stadium and how many people... I hope the buses are running at a reasonable hour. I mean, it is a relatively early start or early end time compared to years ago in 2019.
I think the people will be okay. Yeah, but that year's WrestleMania, everybody was stranded, basically. Yeah.
Tyler the Driver, our MVP that year.
That's correct.
Shout out Tyler.
Shout out Tyler, yeah.
All right, we're going to get into the first night of SummerSlam. The final WrestleTix number was 50,087. So both nights surpassing 50,000 by WrestleTix numbers. And I would certainly... Night two had already surpassed that when we were doing our update on Friday. So by match time on Sunday, like, who knows how many they might just push last minute and get through the doors. But overall, you know, over 100,000 tickets distributed over the course of two nights. And remember, New Jersey putting in a nice $7 million site fee attached to this big weekend. Is everyone off to Tony Hinchcliffe now?
I'm sure somebody might be. Like, maybe they didn't get
anyone,
the memo.
Is there anyone that maybe did not get the notice and they're showing up for Tony Hinchcliffe and they're going to be very disappointed?
You know what? Ticketmaster emails might get sent to your junk folder. Maybe somebody is going to be disappointed right now.
Well, the night was young when Breland sang God Bless America, and we have Michael Cole, and the man who is starting to become the announcer I fixate on the most, Wade Barrett. I think he brings out the extra on these big events where he just has some whoppers that come out on these broadcasts, and we will get to all of them. I mean, both of these men, they had quite the night. And then you were in luck. Your favorite comedian, Drewski, was part of the opening video package.
Yep.
And got great seats to the show.
Yeah, I'm honestly so unaware and so unhip. I've never heard of this person.
Oh, you're not familiar with Drewski?
No, well, are you?
Oh, I go way back with Drewski. This is a
funny?
Weirdo.
Is he really funny?
Well, he's a comedian, so I mean, yeah.
Is he good? Okay, he's funny. Okay.
This opening video, it featured, it was Drewski talking about creating viral moments that are going to hijack your feed tonight.
Yeah.
This also featured a random Undertaker, like, FaceTime video that he had clearly just shot on his phone, and it looked so out of place. And
they had several of those in there. Like, I think they had Roman do one of these selfie videos. Oh, I mean, whole theme is that this, what you're about to see on this show, will end up on TikTok as some sort of viral moment. It's just weird having the fucking Undertaker shoot a selfie video with his, like, blue tinted IT glasses, you know, like looking like a computer coder. It's just weird seeing Undertaker in 2025 do all this.
And then out comes our host, who is introduced. It's Cardi B. And she gets into the ring. Who's ready to whip some ass? And she talks about, who's here for Logan? Who likes Logan Paul? How about Randy Orton? I love me some Randy Orton. And she says that people are going to be talking about this forever. Forever this night. These next 3 hours. Forever. And
is that so far off from the truth? I'm sure maybe in 25 years, you, John, will probably do a 4-hour history of SummerSlam recap talking about this very event.
Oh, I hope not. I hope not. I hope I'm long gone by then. From doing retrospectives, not. Yeah, I hope I'm alive in 40 years. I think that's a reasonable ask on my part, but I don't know. Maybe I'm cutting it short. I don't know. All that to say, it was last year. It might have been as far as a year out that they announced Cardi B hosting SummerSlam. And I would just say, yes, this is a great... They did nothing in the lead up to this show around Cardi B. I think there would be many people who tuned into this show. And, her theme was used to promote SummerSlam, but she's actually here. And this was it. What a hosting job.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know how much more I would have expected. Like, they used her for the promo. They did still continue to mention that she'd be involved, but, you know, it wasn't necessarily going to be anything like a performance or an angle or something like that. And I don't know if I would have expected anything more than that these days.
If she brought in any fans to see this, would they have been a little disappointed that I came because I'm a Cardi B aficionado?
I guess. I mean, I don't know how many people would have come just to see Cardi B. I guess you got to see Cardi B in person if you bought a ticket to see Cardi B.
I guess so.
What would you have expected? What, like her to perform a song or something like that?
I'm just saying, like, what did this bring?
It brings a level of celebrity to this company that fucking loves to ride the dick of every celebrity.
But they didn't. They didn't use it in any of like nothing in the lead up to this.
They could show that Cardi B was on their show. Like, they could show that this was like a, you know, famous person that's all over their show.
I'm arguing that Cardi B is like a major name, and I just feel like this was one where, I mean, you could have like, just for months and months, like, you knew that she was hosting SummerSlam, and it's like,
I mean, she's gonna
come out and she's gonna say, "Hey, I love me some Randy Orton."
You want her to wrestle? You want her to wrestle a match? You want Cardi B in a match? Basically.
I thought she could have done a frog splash. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, maybe that's next year.
Roman Reigns and Jey Uso open up the show. And by open up the show, I mean we got like a half hour of entrances between these two. Jey Uso coming through the concourse as Michael Cole yells, "Welcome to Yeet City." Just totally rhymes. And then Roman comes out and, all right, he's got new sneakers on. Where are the old ones? I'm not kidding. One of the top three moments of this entire show was Bronson Reed coming out with the Jordans that are now his claimed possession. The tribal thief, and wearing, he's got the laces tied up, so he's wearing them. The Shula Fala.
Yes.
I mean, these shoes were the highlight of this angle on Monday night. It was a great angle, but the exclamation point was the man's shoes being stolen. And I can only hope that this is going to be a recurring bit, that Bronson keeps these shoes until somehow Roman can repossess his shoes.
I find this way more compelling than, you know, Solo Sikoa taking the Ula Fala.
This is way more over than the Ula Fala was in that battle that Roman and Solo had. I love this. I laughed as Bronson came out with these shoes.
Well, we need a whole backstory about that. Like,
Roman, we have an origin story about where these shoes came from. They were like handed down from like a family member or something. Mm-hmm. Wade Barrett, though, people probably were fixated on the shoes that they missed Wade's breakdown of Roman Reigns, stating, "It's hard to believe that Roman Reigns is a human being." It's like, really? I've never had that problem. He says he looks like a real life CGI character. I was like, how real life can something computer generated by definition be? A real life CGI character. I know that he meant this as a compliment, but it was a very confusing one that this early and this much caffeine in my body, I was just fixated on trying to decode.
I mean, I guess we've all seen plenty of AI imagery these days, and I guess like one of the qualities of current AI generated imagery is that like the people tend to have really smooth skin.
There's no way AI is this good that you could watch this on your screen and this wasn't inhibited by a human being. Okay. It's not that good.
This is going to be a long review.
Sorry, we'll get going. This was about as long as the entrances for Roman and Jey. So he says that, this is all a result of ice cold confidence that Roman possesses. And we begin the match, and Roman and Jey clear the ring, so we get an encore, with Roman also calling for the encore. So the music starts up again, and the heels pull Roman to the floor, the music gets cut off, and the crowd is sad. So they take over, beating down Reigns on the floor, and then it's Bronson Reed hitting a senton to Jey, right out of the playbook of Hartley Jackson. And Breaker then starts singing toward Roman Reigns. He is the worst singer on earth, and that made this so great as he tried to sing. This was like Leslie Nielsen in Naked Gun singing the national anthem.
Can you imagine that voice singing really anything? Like, can you imagine that voice at karaoke? Can you imagine a Steiner at karaoke?
Yeah, I want it that way. Actually, I love that. Yeah. I'm sure Rick would. I don't know how Rick would fit in with karaoke. Mm-hmm. So they beat on Jey, and dude, you think like Roman, he's got like a night off here, and he's just in the corner. He's knocked off the apron, and it's Jey fighting and fighting. And finally he dives toward Roman, and Roman makes the big tag, and he comes in, and with Braun and Bronson on the floor, Roman decides, you know what? It's SummerSlam. Time to give these new kicks a lift. And he lifted himself off the mat, and he went for a dive over the top. And then his body told him, Roman, we're going to do a tope con hero, but you're not aware of it, because he overshot these two and then had to like flip his body over, and remarkably was able to flip himself. So he basically landed on his back. But this man nearly killed himself at SummerSlam.
Like, if I'm Roman, Bronson Reed, you can keep those shoes. I'm going to stick with these ones for good, because he jumped higher than I think he even
knew. Dude, this was like watching The Rocketeer, okay? He just launched into outer space.
This was fucking Free Willy in the final scene, the orca jumping over the thing.
Rest in peace, Michael Madsen.
Yeah. Like, he jumped way higher than I think he ever thought he could.
Yeah, I believe he could fly, and thankfully he was okay, and Wade confirmed this by stating, quote, Roman Reigns lives on. Yes, he did. He lived. So Reed then decides to try and one-up him, and he goes for a suicide dive, which ended up being a lot safer. They hit a Steinerizer onto Jay, and then Braun runs around the ring into a Superman punch. Reigns gets his revenge from Raw, spearing him through the barricade, and Reed calls for a tsunami to Jay. But Reigns comes back to life, Superman punches him off the top, and Reigns and Jay go for the 1D, which, unfortunately, this 1D, I think it needed a few more dimensions, because they barely got Bronson up, and then they go to a replay, and they show the spear, and they show the Superman punch, and they skip the 1D. They just felt that was not replay worthy, but Bronson's a big dude. He's a big dude to get up for a 1D. So Reigns saves Jay, and he ends up eating a spear by sacrificing himself for Jay, and then Jay throws out Breaker, spears Bronson, and hits the Uso splash, pinning Bronson Reed in 21 minutes and 7 seconds, kicking off the show with the second longest match on the show.
Not including the entrances.
No, not including the with the entrances, because that would probably take us to about 45 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
This was almost the first hour of the show was pretty much Cardi B and this match.
Hey, I thought it was a great stadium match, you know, and maybe my point of comparison was probably the last time Jay and Roman had a match at SummerSlam, which was not a very good one in 2023.
That's a low bar. If that's what it had to exceed,
well,
I don't know if it's...
Honestly, I never know with these guys, because like a Roman Pace match could just be, I mean, just not a very good one. The same goes for Jay. But I think having Braun and Bronson there being so entertaining as these heels, Braun especially, they were able to provide a lot of compelling activity, and that just simply allowed the faces to come back with their big spots that made everybody that much more entertaining. I loved everything they did between Roman Reigns and Braun Breaker. Those two already feel like a very anticipated matchup for maybe even a WrestleMania, you know, coming up soon. I love seeing Roman and Jay as an actual tag team here, attempting at least to do the 1D, bailing one another out, and I thought there was a lot of effort made to just show that, like, at this point, maybe not an equal, but Jay is very much, I would say, up there in terms of like stature to a Roman Reigns. And of course, the big spot of the match, fully showing Roman growing as a person since their days in the Bloodline, being willing to make the sacrifice, being willing to put others above himself. So it was a match that was very high on star power and crowd reaction, but I thought specifically a tremendous showing for Braun Breaker, who I think probably gave everybody in the back a lot of assurance that he could fulfill a big main event spot in the future.
Yeah, I liked the match. I definitely didn't like it as much as you did. I thought that it was overall, like, it was like by the end of this show, I feel like this was probably one of the matches that I think stood out more to me in hindsight. It does set up a lot of stories. I think Breaker and Bronson are a great team together, and I hope that this continues, which I'm sure it's going to, of those being focused on as a team. And I just think with the way Roman and Jay were just destroyed on Monday, I think it really lent to them winning here. But I do see the branching off here. Like, I fully believe we're going to see Roman and Braun and probably many of these combinations in singles afterwards. So
he's got to get his shoes back. So I think
that's the ultimate that's the ultimate goal. Maybe Braun is just the stepping stone to Bronson Reed and getting those shoes back. But yeah, it was like for a stadium show. I mean, it was like overall, like you had like the big dive spot by Roman and the rest of that, like it was getting heat on Jay, and you told a good story here with the Roman sacrificing himself for the spear. And yeah, this was one that the audience, they were pretty amped of, you know, four big stars, and this is the first match of the show as well. So I thought that it did work for the live crowd. I thought it was like a very good match.
I thought that the crowd was up for the entire time. So sounded good to me.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. We had multiple celebrities shown, including Fat Joe. Fat Joe taking in night one of SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
He got it popping in the front row. Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez. Tough crowd here. I feel like I was trying to substitute for WWE late night tonight. Okay. Raquel Rodriguez, yeah. Roxanne Perez against Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss for the women's tag titles. So Charlotte and Alexa come out together and Charlotte puts her fingers up behind Alexa's head, which I don't think I have seen since I was in second grade. This really took me back. Like, this was
friends.
You don't want someone to take your photo with fingers behind your head. Like, that's just so insulting. I was like, wow, this is a real deep burn.
They're just being cute together, John. Okay. I'm sure there are a lot of things that they would you wear a We're Not Friends shirt?
No,
just,
I will.
Yeah.
They're allies of convenience.
They do a lot of things that you probably wouldn't do.
Well, Flair gets attacked with a clothesline. So they attack her. They mention when Bliss gets in that she had a great interview on Fox News this week. I would love to hear this interview on Fox News. She teases the sister Abigail, but Perez rakes her in the eye and a twisted Bliss lands on Perez's knees. So they get the advantage in the corner and eventually she is able to tag Flair, who comes in with chops. And Wade says, you know, they're going bananas for Charlotte Flair. It's like they did not sound like they were going bananas for Charlotte's comeback here. Flair hits a double moonsault, landing on both, and then Bliss comes in, and she goes to strike Raquel, who's got eyes in the back of her head, because she moves out of the way, and Bliss drills Charlotte Flair right in the face with the idea, is this going to be the rift that is caused between the non-friends? So Flair is down, sells this punch like she's just been hit with a baseball bat, and it leads to a Tejana bomb and a Pop Rocks, but Bliss breaks up the cover, and the crowd cheers, hoping that they are still friends, and she just drags Charlotte to the corner. The referee being very liberal here with the lack of tag rope usage and who could be in the ring. We just turned it into a tornado tag and tags herself in. Perez runs into the right hand. And as she sets up for the sister Abigail, Charlotte stands up in the corner. What's she going to do? Is she going to attack Alexa? No. Instead, she boots Raquel. The sister Abigail is hit and Perez eats the fall. 13:35. And the non-friends are now the tag champions as Flair forces a hug with Alexa Bliss as they win the titles. I like the outcome. I wasn't as high on the match, but what did you feel? Wade?
I thought it turned out really well. I thought the action was just okay for the most part. You know, Roxanne, I think to me is awesome. She to me was the best worker in the entire match.
I agree. She was very good in this. And that was, I think, the bright spot.
I think Raquel has gotten better, but I still feel like she's not yet at the place where I think a giant in this division who's had years of experience should be. To me, she's missing a sort of like intensity in that somebody like, and even Nia Jax has been able to find, you know, for the role. But to me, the standouts of the match were, I think, the really well done teases of tension between Charlotte and Alexa. You know, despite how well the pair is connecting with the audience, the tension of one of them eventually turning on the other is always there whenever you have two single stars paired together. I thought it was pretty unexpected that they would do it so soon, but I actually love that they did introduce it here, because to me it worked as a really nice surprise. I thought both teases were really well done. The errant right hand from Alexa, and then I thought what was a really well blocked and framed moment at the end with the sister Abigail that I think could have otherwise turned out really bad in professional wrestling, when you're trying to do this sort of like, is she looking at me? Oh, she's actually looking at that person. Like, that sort of reveal can often be like kind of corny, but I thought it came across perfectly. So the outcome, I'm certainly in favor of. It cements their status as a team and continues the story of what is now like actually a hot tag team in this women's division. And how, I don't know how many times in history we've been able to say that about the WWE women's tags.
Yes. Do we have an official division now?
So it's them. It's Raquel and Roxanne. Secret Hervis.
The Secret Hervis, of course. They always count.
Nikki Bella and...
And who?
Stephanie McCare. Are they a team?
Are they a team? What about the Dungeon Dragons or whatever it is?
I mean, they are, I guess, technically a team. They're more into selling people. Natty wasn't even there. She was at Bloodsport.
She was 1-0 today against Masha Slamovich. Yes.
Well, I'm guessing Raquel and Roxanne win it back before Liv Morgan comes back, but that's probably a long time from now.
Then we go to the Talent Not Booked Lounge, where the New Day, Tozawa, Maxine, and the LWO are fighting over the last piece of Papa John's pizza. Uh-oh. And thankfully, Nikki Bella has secured additional pizza for them as she walked in to save the day.
Company back way, right?
That's a team now. Yeah, certainly. They're definitely a team now.
I mean, credit to Nikki Bella for getting the line in on Raw and playing off of it. I thought that was very funny.
The Quay, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, Nikki was... They got their money's worth out of whatever they're paying Nikki Bella between this and the Maybelline ad. I mean, they're using her a lot for just selling shit we don't need.
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Papa John's.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Karrion Kross and Sami Zayn is our third match, and Kross comes out with Scarlett. And earlier in the show, this was on the pre-show, that Sami Zayn was interviewed, and he was very upset because he was looking around the stadium and looking at all the promotional material and the titles that he is not challenging for, and he's pissed off that he's been detoured by Karrion Kross, and he's in this match that means very little. So, I mean, this was a great last-minute sell. Cole refers to Scarlett as a witch, and Wade is quick to correct him. She is the Sinister Siren. Get it right, okay? Alliteration. Okay. There is a blue thunderbomb that gets stopped, so the Doomsday Saito is hit by Kross. Scarlett pulls out the pipe. We had Miss Scarlett with the pipe at MetLife Stadium. Yeah. And she distracts the referee as Kross tries to use the pipe but is thwarted by a blue thunderbomb. Zayn starts stomping against Kross as the referee is warning Sammy. This isn't the Sami Zayn I know who would stomp a man. And then he goes to check on Kross, so Scarlett places the pipe right in front of Sami Zayn. What's he going to do? Is he going to reveal his true self? And Zayn takes the pipe and he lifts it. And the children are yelling, "No, Sammy, don't do it. Don't succumb to the darkness." And Cole literally asks, "Is he going to go to the dark side?" And he throws the pipe down to the floor. And yes, decency prevails, but he nearly gets rolled up for a two count, and Zayn comes back with an exploder, and this exploder nearly killed Karrion Kross, who got dropped on his head and left for the Huluva kick, where Zayn pinned him clean in 8 minutes and 10 seconds. And we don't know what if this guy reportedly his contract is up. If he is sticking around, I would say if he was not sticking around, they certainly seem to end this one. And he never even had to say that Sammy was right at the end of this. Wasn't that the whole stip?
You're right. Yeah.
What happened to that? I thought this was a very disappointing match by like Sami Zayn on a pay-per-view and getting 8 minutes. I don't know. This program to me, this Scream TV match that got thrown onto this pay-per-view. I just found this to be pretty subpar.
If this was a one-night SummerSlam, yeah, this would probably be on the SmackDown or Raw coming off of SummerSlam and not on the show. It kind of felt like they put this on there to maybe pad the pay-per-view for a one-night event. It was ultimately a pretty forgettable match all the way up until whenever they started doing the angle stuff with the steel pipe. I thought there was like the drama of whether Zayn would turn, I think at this point feels really cliche and one dimensional. Is the babyface going to use the weapon to cheat? I mean, I feel like it's been done to death at this point. And
Say it, Sammy.
Like I ultimately found like, okay, the pipe spot was fine, but as if it wasn't clear enough, you had Michael Cole and Parent basically shout at you. Is he going to cross over to the dark side? Will he use the pipe?
Think of some of the violent matches we have seen this man in. He's like striking a man with a pipe like that. That's the demarcation line.
Yeah. To me, one of the bigger issues, like I know Cross has been doing so well in terms of just like crowd connection and or at least like online. But to me, whenever he was in control in ring here, he's still not very fun to watch. There's just something I think that's not really clicking about his in ring, at least as a heel. So they kept this short, which I think was to its benefit. And we'll see what the future holds for those two, Scarlett and Cross, I mean.
We got another tribute to Hulk Hogan and specifically talking about his history at SummerSlam. And little did we know that he was the Undertaker of this event. He was undefeated at SummerSlam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How many? I wonder.
Oh, I should know this, but it was like under 10.
So like 5 or 6, I mean, or something like that.
Yeah. So anyway.
Okay.
Randy Orton had the chance to end it, and he didn't. And Nick Bolle and his wife were shown in the crowd as they played Real American. They also promoted Triple Mania coming up August 16th, which is airing on YouTube. So during this 3 minutes, we went from Hulk Hogan tribute to a Maybelline ad to Triple Mania and out to Psycho Clown with Mr. Iguana.
That's right. WWE's YouTube, not Triple
Mania. WWE's YouTube, correct. Correct. So this is probably going to be like the most watched Triple Mania ever.
Yeah, I would assume so. And I mean, we'll definitely have, I would say, their production all over it, unlike the other AAA shows that have happened recently.
Do we get the revival of Conan and Corey Graves?
I think that's a good question. Yeah, I think Corey for sure. I guess Conan maybe a bit more of a question mark. I wonder Jeremy Borash, who's now kind of in charge of all of that. I wonder if he'll do it.
Yeah, I don't know. Corey Graves was tremendous on that last show, and that was that really just got him out of like, now he's back. He's on Raw. He's, you know, he's in the good graces. Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill for the WWE Women's Championship. And Cargill comes out and she's in the colors of the Jamaican flag. And they show Cardi B in the crowd. And then Tiffany makes her entrance and we get right into things. And early on, Stratton hits a swanton and Jade manages to kick out at one. Catches Tiffany off a handspring back elbow into the corner and just throws her down to the mat and lifts her up for the Eye of the Storm for a two count. Stratton comes back, Michinoku driver, hits an Alabama slam, which he had to struggle to hit, goes for the PME, and Jade gets the feet up, hits Jaded, but Stratton lands in the ropes from as Jade is going for the cover and where she had positioned her. So Stratton counters Jaded with this rolling bridge on top, takes the choke slam, and then Jade pulls her up onto the turnbuckle, and she attempts an avalanche version of Jaded when Tiffany counters it by flipping both of them forward and then hitting the prettiest moonsault ever in 7 minutes and 5 seconds. I have to say, I was very impressed with this. This was the match that we talked about, Way, as being one that, I mean, there was a lot of pressure, I think, on both of them. They kept this at a safe amount of time. And I thought that there was plenty of ambitious stuff that was put in here for Jade. I'm not saying this was the match of the show. It was not. But I would say of where my expectation level was, this outperformed it for me.
I thought they did well with the match. You know, they created a pretty compelling, like, bell-to-bell, you know, routine, I would say. To me, though, it was a match that I think did show the gulf of ability between the challenger and the champion here. I think Jade looked good here at, like, for, I think, a Jade Cargill. She continues to improve, but it's a very slow progression. And even though she's getting better, I still think she's far from the level they need somebody to be at to carry a world championship. Stratton, you know, even though like she's still, I would say, relatively new, and I think a lot of the match feels more like a gymnastics routine than an organic fight, she still pulls off everything with almost 100% accuracy. And a lot of it is very ambitious and very impressive. So
unique counters and coming up with the flips, like they're leaning on the strengths that she has. And like, that's kind of where both of them are at this point.
She Stratton has a coordination that I think Jade is still lacking. So I think, like, mainly speaking about tonight's result, like, I think Jade probably still needs to show a bit more consistency at a high level of performance in order to perhaps be trusted with a championship reign. And I hope she'll get there eventually, but I'm kind of glad they didn't crown her yet, because to me that was almost a mistake AEW made with the TBS championship, because it's kind of obvious to viewer watching, you know, whether or not somebody is a credible champion or not.
Yeah. I like the match for what it was. And they kept this really quick, like 7 minutes. I believe this was the shortest match on the show. Second from the top is Randy Orton and the debuting Jelly Roll against Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. Jelly Roll comes out and he starts singing Randy Orton's theme as he introduces his partner. We are also shown his wife, Bunny XO, in the front row. Michael Cole notes that Jelly Roll has lost 230 pounds to get ready for this match, and he is now down to 299 as of today, which was his goal, to get under 300. And Wade mentions Jelly Roll working with the likes of Matt Bloom, and wait for it, wait for the name drop, Robbie Brookside.
All right. Nice. That is an incredible amount of weight to lose. 230?
That's he basically lost Bret Hart.
Yeah, he lost a UFC heavyweight.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. So,
wow. What a transformation.
Very incredible. So Logan.
So that's the key to losing weight. Just get yourself a match at SummerSlam.
Do you know that Netflix is putting out a documentary on The Biggest Loser and what went into that show and all the horror stories? I'm afraid to watch it because I did used to watch that show, and it sounds like, I guess, some scary stories.
When you're getting a Netflix documentary, it's usually not really a good
thing. It's never a good sign. Yet one of the hosts of Biggest Loser agreed to sit down and chat about it. Anyway, Paul nails Jelly Roll before the bell, and Jelly Roll insists on starting, and he gets a chant going for him, and Jelly Roll blocks a scoop slam and delivers one to Logan, does the Fargo strut, landing an elbow, and then Drew tags in, and Jelly Roll. Dude, this guy's facials, he's just taking this deep breath, and he looks at Randy, but then he explains he just doesn't want to tag out. He needs to test himself against Drew McIntyre. So Orton psychs him up, and Drew just beats the hell out of him and yells at him that this is the day the music dies.
Oh my God.
Take that, Don McLean. And Drew takes over. He knocks Randy off the apron and then runs at Jelly Roll, and Jelly Roll sidesteps and throws Drew over the top. I feel they needed to limit the Jelly Roll offense on Drew McIntyre, of all people. I mean, it was just to me a little bit too much to watch here. So to the floor they go. Orton. Jelly Roll was in this for the first 7 minutes before he tags Orton in. I think we well went into the maximum amount that Jelly Roll needed to start this match. So Randy comes in. This is how far into the match we're in. Randy's going right into like his closing sequence of moves when he gets the hot tag at 7 minutes. He drops.
Well, listen, like, Jelly Roll wasn't about the reverse roles and take the hot tag from Randy Orton.
I would have loved that. The way they booked this, I'm surprised that it didn't build up to Jelly Roll.
They actually did do that at the very end.
Dude, they made Jelly
Roll the big one.
Whatever you want to say, Jelly Roll was booked to be the star of this match by leaps and bounds. So Orton drops both. He hits a draping DDT and sends both to the floor. And he drops them on the desk. And then he gets blindsided with a claymore by the desk. And Logan hits the titanium right hand to Jelly Roll, who goes down. And then Logan clears the desk. Jelly Roll gets placed on the desk. And Logan Paul gets onto the top with two bottles of Prime, and they shoot this thing amazingly. He leaps off and rotates in midair for this splash through the desk on top of Jelly Roll. And this place goes insane.
It made me go right to the store to buy my drink.
Oh, you bought all the flavors, did you?
I had to. Yeah, it was that great of a splash.
Well, Jelly Roll was dead, and he is being tended to by the trainers as Drew and Logan beat on Randy 2-on-1. And then Jelly Roll, he's being helped to the back. And suddenly, it's King of the Ring 98. And it's not Jelly Roll, it's Mick Foley. And he turns around and he sees the ring. He says, I can't leave. I can't leave like this. And he returns to the ring. This is like a Terry Funk in All Japan. And he comes back in, and Randy, being beaten down, crawls toward Jelly Roll, his savior. Jelly Roll, you gotta help me. And he tags in Jelly Roll, and Jelly Roll is here to save the day. And he comes back in, and he hits a choke slam to Logan. He hits a black roll slam onto Drew McIntyre. And then it's Drew breaking up a cover, lands the Claymore. Orton comes in to RKO Drew. And then Paul sends Randy into the post and hits a frog splash, pinning Roll in 17 minutes and 6 seconds as the heels get the victory.
17 minutes, holy shit.
17 wow. minutes, dude. This was...
Oh, my God.
They spent a lot of time on this one as well. And all I can say, if you were a Jelly Roll fan, they took your fandom very seriously tonight, because they treated this guy like he's winning the title at WrestleMania next year.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I think they pushed him harder than Sami Zayn getting that elusive title win.
Well, I mean, he has a lot more followers than Sami Zayn. I'm pretty sure, I would say. I think at least. They did really great work here. You know, I would say Roll, I think as a celebrity, he's probably at about the level you would expect of like a pre-Pat McAfee celebrity. So he's certainly
and he clearly got like the accolades of all the people that trained with him. Just they raved about this guy as like being like serious about this, as serious as a musician is going to be coming in to prepare for this.
So not a Travis Scott is what you're saying.
I think it's far removed from okay. Travis Scott. And quite frankly, like 90% of the celebrities that have probably come through the doors at WWE, and it's really only until these last few years that you've seen like genuine fans that also happen to be like worldwide celebrities that want to do this.
Yeah, yeah. And his is a case where I think like he's not an athlete, right?
No.
Like he's not somebody who I think, well, certainly not a Logan Paul, not a Pat McAfee, not even a Bad Bunny in terms of what he's able to do in the ring. But for what he lacks in athleticism, he certainly has in crowd connection. And I think he has a high level of charisma that he was able to showcase here in his mannerisms and just like the, you know, like the,
he can talk and he's got good visuals, like in terms of just conveying it. Like the athleticism is very low. And I think that will be people's critique of this match is just how much you could,
but that's only because we've been spoiled by the Logan Pauls and like the Bad Bunnies.
Well, that's what you're stepping into. I mean, I think that's a totally fair comparison point. If you're somebody that is being asked to sit down and watch a major match, and that's just going to naturally be what you compare it to.
Sure. But it doesn't mean that you can't have a good performance, like by, I think like the standard of what we've traditionally expected of a celebrity. Like there was enough physicality from him here to let them craft a compelling match around it all. And they used a lot of bells and whistles, like with the stretcher job and everything. And I thought it resulted in a match that was memorable and built to some excellent moments. It all really worked, you know, like did the hot tag wall, black hole slam look good, choke slam look good, and took the pin, didn't even, you know, get the victory, which I think is perfectly fine, because he's not.
I think this would have been too much if, like, even if it's Randy doing the pin. I mean, you could have gotten away with that, but I...
And what are you building to? Like, he's not...
Well, that's it.
He's unlikely. He might do another match, sure, but I think it's better.
He might, but there's
nothing... In either case, Logan should be winning the first match, either way.
I would say, like, up until this point in the show, like, I did not think this was, like, some excellent show up until this point, but the audience really did get... From the splash through the desk onward and the stuff with Jelly Roll, like... The last couple of minutes of this, like the crowd was pretty into this as well.
Oh my God.
I think that's the most you can ask for in a match that you're laying this out with a guy who's never had a match before, that's out there for 17 minutes. And he was pretty much involved in the whole thing. Even when he was like selling on the floor and being brought to the back, like the focus was on Jelly Roll for so much of this. And some people might not care for that. But I mean, for what you were laying out here, it did work for the audience.
To me, that's just like, that's just like professional wrestling, taking somebody like who's not used to being in this world and throwing them in and just kind of reacting to just the novelty of seeing a person completely out of their element try to perform. And I thought it provided a really exciting, one of the highlights of the entire show. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
They promoted Clash in Paris at the end of August, August 31st, which has a 2 p.m. Eastern start time. And also in this period, they did, much like on SmackDown, they showed highlights of Paul Levesque at the White House with Donald Trump. And they showed the highlights here on the screen, but not the live reaction. And you can see the videos. This was soundly booed in MetLife Stadium from the videos that circulated. So I think that was very interesting. And that was obviously a reaction they had to have expected.
Yeah. Obviously, no surprise, I guess, given the state and just given the fact that they chose not to include the crowd audio here.
No, nor show Linda McMahon, who was apparently at the show.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah.
What reaction would she have gotten?
I'm not sure. If it was any other wrestler on the roster being a part of something like this, I wonder if they would have took the time to actually show it on their pay-per-view. But because Levesque is basically the company, he's the face of the company right now, I feel like they couldn't resist. Like, this is Paul Levesque's maybe most visible moment in maybe, I don't know, mainstream. Like, it's the most mainstream Paul Levesque, I guess, has ever been as a person. And
it was either going to be him or El Grande Americano. Those were your options.
And as a company, I guess, you know, a company who loves to feature anybody with any sort of following outside of professional wrestling on their TV, you don't get more mainstream than, you know, the White House, even as polarizing as a Donald Trump may be.
Well, but that is a change, because they have plenty of opportunities over the last decade to attach themselves. And it's only now that they are openly promoting this on their own television and feeling like this is, you know, there may be boos at our arenas or stadiums, but this is like 5 years ago. There were times that like the McMahon family, including Levesque, they went and visited the White House and those photos were online, but they did not show that stuff on television. And now they,
but a visit is different from actually being involved in whatever this campaign is.
Well, right? I know WWE has been very much deciphering like the level of what we can attach ourselves to. So,
Well, that's bullshit. Yeah, they are. They're directly attached.
Into the main event, and the video package features the past summers of Punk. The best one being the summer of Punk in 2005, of which we own zero footage of said summer of 2005. And we just got an image of Punk holding the redacted championship that they cannot refer to either. And then showing 2011 with the pipe bomb, and now 2025 as we go to Gunther and CM Punk for the World Heavyweight Championship. And way, we had CM Punk coming out in the Fantastic Four colors. Is this correct?
Oh, is that what it was directly referencing?
I think so.
I guess so. Sure. It's clobbering time. That's where.
Yes. That's, I mean, thing. Timely. If you're going to do that, now's the time probably.
Before you get sued.
Yeah. I mean, that could be coming. So the bell rings and Michael Cole notes, they are fighting for the richest prize on Monday Night Raw. Like, okay, well there, that's a bit of a ... Punk begins and he starts working on the arm. I mean, if you want to see a CM Punk love letter to Bret Hart, I think this was the match. I mean, it's a lot of Punk matches.
You
can
watch
it.
Yeah, you can watch any Punk match in the past 5 years.
But I mean, I'm watching this. I was like, my goodness, this guy, I think he's just got Bret matches on loop at home. I think that's just what he watches. And this is a match pretty much built around Gunther's chops and murdering Punk. But in the classic way for a babyface, he never was like dead. He would just, he would have that bit of energy so that he'd come back, and he was always alive. He was always standing up to Gunther, but this was like a 10-8 round that Gunther was commanding throughout most of this match. And man, he puts Punk in a tree of woe. He is just lighting this dude up. And Gunther starts kneeing and punching the ribs, digs his knuckles in as he applies an abdominal stretch. And Punk goes for a reversal, and he just tries to lift Gunther. And this crowd, like, they were so hot for Punk from the moment he goes out, and then any semblance of Punk teasing the GTS, this crowd was so amped for. I mean, this was such a pro CM Punk crowd. And Gunther escapes the GTS attempt, boots Punk right in the face. And Punk is telling him to bring it on, and he gets dropped. And you get Gunther's trash talk. Who's the kid now? Call me a kid again. And telling Punk he will never be champion as he just smothers him. And Gunther stops a sharpshooter attempt and tries to apply his own while flexing. And Punk manages to reverse the sharpshooter. And he's got his legs tied with Gunther as CM Punk is thinking about that 1991 VHS of SummerSlam that he just watched probably last week as he turns Gunther around and applies the sharpshooter, but Gunther gets to the rope, something Kurt Hennig could not do. So Punk returns fire and gets a triangle applied. Gunther escapes that, and then Gunther hits the frog splash as Michael Cole compares him to a flying pterodactyl. Not our only reference to a extinct creature, because then Gunther runs into a GTS attempt, but again he stops it and proceeds to hit the dinosaur dropkick.
I wonder how Gunther feels about all these dinosaur comparisons. What the hell?
If this was the Vince era and I heard these references back to back, I was like, this guy's coming back as a T-Rex. Like, that's going to be his gimmick. The man is a dinosaur.
You know, Jurassic World is a very popular franchise to this day.
Have they ever called it the dinosaur dropkick before?
I don't recall.
It didn't ring a bell to me that they, I feel I would have reserved that one in memory.
I'm guessing this is just like the
shotgun dropkick, sending him into the corner.
Yeah,
Balor does.
I'm guessing like what Bear just thinks, oh, he's really
heavy.
No,
this was Cole. This was Cole.
Oh, I guess it's Cole and Bear then. So what, they just think like, oh, this guy's really heavy. And dinosaurs are heavy as well.
This sent me off into a magic, like, is this how they envision like a dinosaur would get like air and drop kick somebody? Like they'd take like the flat back as they strike the
pterodactyl. I can kind of see it. You know, like when the pterodactyl flaps his wings, it kind of looks like Gunther, like, you know, with his arms stretched out. No.
I'm very curious if we get a rebranding of Gunther. So he kicks Punk out to the floor. But rather than pounce on Punk, he starts playing to the camera. He stands on top of the desk and poses, allowing Punk to get to his feet and pulls out Gunther's legs from underneath. And Gunther is supposed to basically face plant into a monitor and disappears under the desk. He comes out from under the desk covered in blood, which is so clearly coming from the forehead, but you've got Cole and Barrett. Is that his nose? Does he have a broken nose? Because it was supposed to look like his nose was all busted up. Apparently, Gunther has to have sinus surgery, and that was the impetus for this and why they were focusing so heavily on the nose. And Gunther was selling the nose afterwards, if you notice he's holding the nose. But this so clearly looked like a traditional, like he's bleeding from the forehead when he comes up. And I don't know, maybe he just wasn't down with like slicing his nose. I wouldn't either, to be fair.
Hard to make that look convincing, I suppose. Like, what would you cut? Like your nostril?
I don't know.
That sounds awful.
So he's bleeding, and Gunther sold this. Like, he gets into the ring and he cowers into the corner, and when he realizes he's bleeding, he's like freaking out at the sight of his own blood.
That's his one weakness, the sight of blood.
His selling was great here. I thought it was so great. It's like the big bully has now suddenly been whacked in the head, and he's so image conscious. And Punk lands a step-up knee and calls for the GTS, but Gunther manages the sleeper, and the crowd goes nuts. They think this is going to be it, but Punk fights to his feet, lifts him, and hits the GTS, but the big dinosaur won't go off his feet. This is like watching a Jack and the Beanstalk, and he hits one more GTS, and Punk gets on top and pins Gunther in 30 minutes to win the championship. And I thought this was like, it was a really great main event. This was definitely my match of the show. What did you think?
I thought it was a great match too. Yeah. It was like a good, slower paced main event match. And
yes, very.
But one that built up really well. And I think you kind of want a pace like this for something that is supposed to have Punk show that he's been worn out and that he's barely hanging on, especially for everything to come after the match. But, you know, based it a lot on just like Gunther being dominant with his chops. I think Punk playing a very convincing, like weakened veteran running on empty. I didn't love how they got to the table, a blade job. Like, it just feels really uncharacteristic that Gunther would just pause mid-match to gloat and celebrate. And if the intent was to just get him under the desk to draw blood, I wish they came up with a more organic way of trying to get there rather than just like have Gunther look so silly, because he's not that type of heel at all usually. So that might be my lone criticism of this match, but
it was not smooth. I agree. Like that whole transition to get there, but that is my understanding of like what the thinking was behind it. So, you know, you've got some of the classic championship calls. People think of like Bobby Heenan when Flair wins the Rumble in 92. And of course the boyhood dream has come true. Well, Michael Cole, he reserved his for CM Punk's big title win. After a decade of bitterness to finally coming home, a decade of bitterness, this man who has lived under a storm cloud and just screaming at the world, he has won. I mean, I just could not believe this.
After the Art of Wrestling podcast with Cole Cabana, to brawl in, to brawl out.
Where is Dr. Chris Amon right now? So Punk is clutching the title. He's in near tears. They show Gunther holding the towel to his nose, and then Seth Rollins' music plays. And out comes Seth on crutches with Paul Heyman. And Cole and Wade, they're so quick to state to us, well, he has until June to cash that in. I mean, can't do it now. And Rollins just stares at him and then turns around, and he goes to head to the back when he pauses, drops the crutches, removes the knee brace, and proceeds down the ramp as Michael Cole is having convulsions, and he proceeds to attack Punk, nailing him with the briefcase over and over. But before he has cashed it in, so we have established based on just the Naomi cash in that you can use this as a weapon, but until you cash it in, you can't be disqualified for it. So the bell rings, Jessica Carr accepts the contract, and there's a stomp, and Punk's title reign ends in 11 seconds as he got to...
Was it 11 seconds? That was it?
Well, from bell to bell, when it right. rang. Not okay. from, obviously, it came out. So we got Punk doing a tribute to Brett, as he does in most of his big matches, and then he got to do, I guess, a bit of a Hogan tribute here, playing the role of Yokozuna. and Seth playing Hogan for ironic purposes, and CM sure. Punk gets the win. Breaker and Reed are out, and our closing scene was Rollins and Heyman cross-legged over CM Punk as the Seth Riders are four strong yet again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, wasn't sure if they were going to do it tonight or wait for it, but they chose to do it in the venue here.
Can I just say, it would have been so foolish for them to overthink this. Like, this was the time to do it, and this would have been, yes, you would have got the big reaction no matter where you do it, but from my understanding, they never wavered. Like, this was from doing the angle at Saturday night's main event, like, I was never told that they were wavering or not going to do it. And I think to their credit, like, this, to me, honestly, I did not think this was overall that great of a show. And the moment of this show is going to be this cash in. Like, this will be the enduring memory of this particular show itself.
And when you just think about the character itself, it doesn't make sense to allow Punk to recover overnight just to do a cash in or just wait to another time.
We don't have the heist of the century. This is now the ruse of the century.
Oh, okay. Oh my goodness, what a ruse. What a ruse, John. They fooled everybody. They reshuffled an entire Saturday Night's Main Event run sheet in order to lead up to this. They worked the co-host of the Rich Eisen show, John. All of it would have been a complete success if not for you. You should be ashamed of yourself.
I had some ruse clues. I thought the cash-in came off great. I thought this was, to me, like, you know, it again, this is going to be the high point of the show for many people and kicking off this big Rollins run, and I thought it was done really well for what you wanted to do. And to me, kind of capped off a show that I would say, if not for that main event, like, I did not think too highly overall of night one.
I give them a lot of credit for the lengths they tried to go to set up the surprise for the conclusion of this first night of SummerSlam. I mean, to do everything they did in order to try to make people, you know, suspend their disbelief that a cash-in wasn't about to happen. I
think they should have gone harder, to be quite honest. Like, I was when we found out that Raw was in Birmingham, like, I thought they were going to do footage of him going there. Mm-hmm. The fact is, like, he's got x-rays from the last knee surgery. Like, they could have just really just poured it on.
Honestly, even if they showed the x-rays, I think people would have still been suspicious.
But. Well, some people would. But, I mean, quite frankly, you go online, there's plenty of people who...
Oh, there
still,
are still,
like,
a lot of people
Oh,
who,
they surprised
who
a lot of people. And that's why they should not have been shifting this on just... I thought, like, it was very smart on their end to just... This was their plan, and they ran through with it, and now you've got, like, this is their biggest story going into the rest of the summer.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious to hear from, coming off of this, if, like, there was, like, a minor injury, at the very least, that might have necessitated maybe, you know, like, some of the reporting that was out there as well, or if it was just, like, he was healthy the entire time. I wonder if we'll hear anything about that. But I kind of thought, like, all of it showed a great attention of detail that I don't think we've been used to. And it made for a really nice big cash-in moment to close the show.
And what do you see coming out of this?
So Gunther, I guess, getting his nose surgery. So he probably will be off the map for a bit. But then you got Punk and Rollins, clearly the next feud. Punk and Rollins, the next feud, and then Breaker. You know, you have to remember Roman now and Jay are attached to this entire world.
Are attached, and let's not forget that, like, your champion did just lose to LA Knight on that show. Like, if you wanted to, like, LA Knight,
You know, LA Knight gets a title shot
again. Like, they booked that finish knowing, like, this is where they were going, and mm-hmm. I don't think, like, if they didn't want LA Knight to win, they could have just done a wave off and not done a finish there. So you could get LA Knight injected into a title picture here. So whether you go with, like, a multi-man match for Paris, or you go to one of these singles options, there's a lot on the table. But you're right, with Roman, with Jay, with Punk, and I'd throw in, like, LA Knight in the mix. Like, they've, like, that's kind of your Raw title scene.
Yeah, and we are, I guess, I mean, we're many months away from War Games, but not really that far away, you know, only a few PLEs away that I think they might be able to peak this with this crop of, people involved in a match like that.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com, where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. So there you go. That was night one of SummerSlam. We will be back on Sunday night with night two. We're going to get to your feedback, but quickly, Way, I don't want to do a preview of night number two, but I do want to get your thoughts on the SmackDown segment with Cody Rhodes and John Cena, where they pretty much turned John Cena going into tomorrow night's match with Cena.
Yeah, I thought it was really bold of them to do, and I thought it made for something like a really interesting talking point that is having people both suspicious and also just accepting of what they're watching. So I thought it was like a really nice way to pique interest in the result of this match, because now you truly watch the show and you're really not sure what's going on. If it is Cena actually, you know, staying babyface, or if it's just all of a swerve, which I feel like a lot of people might be leaning towards. But yeah, I liked it a lot.
And then they had a toast at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The real American beer. So, I mean, that. I mean, I think they wanted this to feel like this is going to be their big do-over from WrestleMania. And I think we'll have a better assessment of this after SummerSlam and see how this comes off. I will say, like, if this is the end of the Cena heel turn, I am not going to be looking at this heel turn as, like, this is just, like, he showed up. He's like, yeah, I'm going to be a good guy now. Like, that was it, pretty much.
Well, I mean... I wonder if this was all, like, will Levesque or will they ever reveal what the actual plan was, if it was supposed to end at SummerSlam, or if they had plans for it to go all the way until the end of the year. I'm not really sure.
I'm sure they'll lay out every last detail on Unreal.
All part of the show. Part of the show. Yeah. I mean, isn't that better than, like, you know, not listening to the crowd? Like, if something is clearly not working and changing it, isn't that better?
Those are two separate things, though. I think that you absolutely had to turn Cena. But you cannot tell me this is like some great storytelling in terms of how they got here and what they have done. Like, this just to me was, I don't know. I have not looked too highly on this whole Cena heel run. And if this is the end, yes, it's the right move to make. But it also just feels as though this is like we're just waving a wand and boom. There was no big lead up to this. There was no great reasoning for this. It's like, hey, I lost Travis Scott, man. So you know what? I don't think I have much of a heel run left. Let's have some beer. But we'll see tomorrow night what they do. Six more matches coming up on SummerSlam. Let's go to Forum.
We got some super chats, actually.
Oh, then super chats get to the front of the line.
Super chats. Thank you guys for, again, subscribe to youtube.com/postwrestling. We are less than 100 people away from 20,000. Will we reach 20,000 subscribers on the night of SummerSlam Sunday? Okay.
Let him update his username to 20K Ting. Okay.
Can you imagine the fireworks? I got all the explosives right here. They're set to go. They're rigged up. It's gonna blow my basement into flames.
I hope you take them out to your backyard.
Yeah. So just hit that subscribe button and join us again here right afterwards. But thank you guys for your super chat. So let's go to James Gentry, who sends $5. Pollock is the real Oracle and wise man. We acknowledge John Pollock. Throw the ones up for Mr. Pollock right there. No ruse clues here, but we got Bluey sending 100
Bluey.
Sending 100 rupees. Lovely main event. NWA title match worked as a war of attrition. It had me throughout. What does he mean, NWA title match? World title match?
Yeah,
okay.
Probably.
Glad Punk's still chasing. Not as happy he's stuck with freaking. Okay.
Well, I mean, they were always going to get back to that program. I mean...
Well, Rollins has always said he will make sure CM Punk is never champion. Now, he let him be champion for 40 seconds, which I guess was nice of him, but he won't let him last more than 40 seconds as champion, all right?
He should come out on Raw and say, I went against my word. I did let him become champion.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin Anderson sends $2. Thank you, Kevin Anderson. Pollock, 316. Wow, a lot of congrats to John Pollock here. He's just doing his job, everybody. Okay, when he's presented with having to report an injury of a professional wrestler that he knows is not an actual injury, he's just going to tell it. Let's go to John Fury 316, who sends $7. Thank you for that. He says, after watching WWE Unreal and SummerSlam, I'm now convinced there is a writer in the writers' room that's not a fan of CM Punk.
I don't
know how you look at the result of this night and just think it's some sort of slight on Punk. This is all in the service of story. Now, you could look at what they did for Crown Jewel and maybe come to that conclusion. But SummerSlam is a different story. Like,
yeah, but you know what? Coming out of Crown Jewel, it's like if you don't think CM Punk is like Paul's guy, like that is like he is one of the faces of this company and he's in a very good standing here, and yeah. He's in the main event scene, and he's going to be in the main event scene for as long as his body holds up on it. So I think Punk's in a great spot. Have you seen any of Unreal yet?
No, not yet. It's been too busy. But we will do a review on
Tuesday.
Yeah,
we are. Neither of us have seen any of those episodes yet, but we are going to be doing reviews for them beginning Tuesday, postwrestlingcafe.com. We'll be doing a review for each episode starting Tuesday.
Yep. Let's go to Matt Logan, who sends $5. John and Wade coming in 35 minutes late. Just a token for all the good stuff you guys do. Well, thank you for that support, man. I appreciate that a lot. And then let's go to John Fury one more time, who sends another $7. Thank you, John Fury. Considering Punk's age, when will they pull the trigger on a CM Punk title run?
I think it's like this idea, like he's going to be the one that he's like, there's a lot of story in him chasing.
The money is in the chase.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen Punk with the title and it's like, it's fine, but I think he's way more compelling chasing after it, you know? So, eventually I think when it makes, you know, sense for them to have a prolonged run, I'm sure they will. Muggin sends $2 to say, I salute you, John Pollock.
No, we salute you, Muggin.
Thank you very much, guys, for your super chats. Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com, where all of our Post Wrestling Cafe patrons have a chance to interact and leave feedback and questions for all of our reviews that John and I do.
We will start with Jeremy, all the way from Texas. As Gunther was walking to the ring, I couldn't help but think the aura would have been so much more had he continuously held the title from the previous SummerSlam. I think WWE's done a great job with the Rollins-Punk story, with Punk winning at the Netflix premiere and Seth getting his Empire Strikes Back moments at WrestleMania and tonight. Heading into tomorrow, I hope we get something with this John Cena supposed face turn. In a vacuum, it seems lazy. Do we get Dwayne? Do we get a double turn? I hope we get more than a guy waking up feeling like a good guy again. Yeah, I would say you can't really judge the Friday segment until you see what happens tomorrow night, how they execute it. I do feel we are at the point now where if it's not the full turn, like the babyface turn is coming, and we're talking about like you've kind of got to get there at fairly soon, if not outright by the end of tomorrow. I do not see a double turn. The last person I'd be turning right now is Cody for many reasons.
Go to Brian in New Jersey, who says, party like it's 2013, and looking how that year SummerSlam ended compared to tonight. A very effective angle, albeit a buzzkill like it was with Danielson back then. I enjoyed the main event for the most part, as slow as it felt. I was certainly more invested in it than the Jelly Roll tag, which just was not for me. My favorite match may have been the chaotic opener, once the entrances were done. Bloodsport earlier was fun. Don't F with Natty.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see Bloodsport yet. I heard, I believe it was Pete Dunne and Jonathan Gresham had a really excellent match. Nick Khan was there, as were several from WWE as well. But cool. Yes, that was happening this afternoon. We go to, Muggin here. A strong night one capped off with a dope main event. Roman Reigns taking the bullet for Jay was something I wanted since he flipped sides like Anakin a year ago. The Roman of 5 years ago wouldn't have done that. Actions do speak louder than words. I had a gut feeling that there's an off chance that Seth would pull the trigger, and when the camera lingered too long, I knew it. Seth Rollins is running away with Playa Hater of the Year. Took the words right out of my mouth.
All right, let's go to Jurassic Park fan, who says, good evening, guys. Pretty great SummerSlam night one with a great main event and closing segment with Seth predictably cashing in. Even with John's wonderful reporting, the moment Seth went down at Saturday night's main event, I just assumed it was an angle because of how that LA night match ended and him hitting the BFT and pinning Seth clean, and the focus on him grabbing his knee just felt orchestrated to me. Nonetheless, it was still an amazing moment with Seth's music hit. Looking forward to the next chapter of Braun Seth versus Punk. As for the rest of the show, it was fine. Nothing necessarily blew me away, but Roman and Jay tag match was a chaotic one, and Roman sacrificing himself for Jay felt huge and a big character moment. I'm so happy for Alexa and Charlotte winning for the tag titles. Question, I didn't watch live, but there seemed to be a record-breaking number of ads between matches. What were your thoughts on this?
I find it to be pretty standard with shows. I mean, it's just, I didn't sense any more or any less than usual.
I didn't watch any of them, so I don't see why anybody would want to start these shows live.
It's, yeah,
like,
I mean,
you can save so much time by just starting like an hour late.
Anthony, patience is truly a virtue where one had been disrespected at every turn, verbally attacked every chance a microphone was placed in front of their face. But even still, you must swallow his pride, Head down and keep grinding to once again reach your goal and become the champion that you know you can be. It was a long ride, the doubters were loud, but his focus was harder, and on that special night, he once again finally achieved his dream as champion. And this certainly lends itself more to those on the forum, as he has a photo of Hangman Page at the end of All In Texas. SummerSlam Night 1 was a meh show. I wasn't too excited with the build going in, and the show kind of like felt like watching an episode of SmackDown. I would not say that. It did have like the Big Show feel, I think. I was kind of Tiffany retained. I imagine surprised Tiffany retained. Then I guess they are going to turn Jade into a monster heel and have someone chase Tiffany for a while. I appreciate the effort, but I never want to see Jelly Roll in a ring again. And the cash in was predictable, but fine. And he says goodnight. Thank you very much.
Pollock is deliberately avoiding some of the other comments here, but
what did you didn't really summarize, like, overall, like, your feelings of night one?
I think my viewing might have been greatly skewed by, like, not having to sit through a lot of those commercials. Like, I sort I have an expectation for, I think, like, a WWE event, and I kind of watch for different things. I watch for audience grandeur. I watch for spectacle, and I thought this show completely provided that.
Yeah, I mean, it had, like, the feeling of like a, you know, significant show, and I'm sure that will be replicated tomorrow night as well. I do feel I would be very surprised if tomorrow is not maybe the better, like, wrestling show of the two, when, like, I think people have high hopes for the women's title. The TLC match is probably going to be totally insane as well, but we will see. There was good on this show, and there was stuff that I found to be just kind of skippable overall.
The Cross Zane match I thought was very skippable. Like, Stratton Jade, I thought was a perfectly, like it was about as good of a match as I think I expected those two to have. I thought Roman and Jay and Braun, like, certainly delivered in terms of just, like, how reactive the crowd was. So, I thought it was a satisfying show.
Yeah, I would say for me, it was like the last, whatever it was, half hour or so, 45 minutes of the show, that to me was the strongest, between the main event, the cash in after. It ended on a big high, at least for me. So there you go. That is night one in the bag. And we are going to be back tomorrow night, right after SummerSlam, night two, to go through everything happening at MetLife Stadium. Way, thank you so much. I know, guys, Way has an incredibly intense schedule, and he makes it all work for you, the listener / viewer. So we thank you.
No more intense than I think most people, but, like, yeah, 6 o'clock is tough.
The 6 Eastern start times. How does Clash in Paris work for you at 2 p.m. Eastern time? What is that?
A bit better.
That's okay.
All right. Yeah.
All right. We are going to say goodbye. Hey, did you hit subscribe yet? Did you? We're waiting. 20K. We better have 20K, or maybe we just won't come back tomorrow, but we will. So good night, goodbye, and we'll chat with you after night two.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.